From the John Nevitta Broadcast Center, it's time for Keeping It Real with Frankie D on the Windy City Hometown Entertainment Network.
Just what makes that little old ant think he'll move that rubber tree plant? Anyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant.
But he's got high hopes. He's got high hopes. He's got high apple pie in the sky.
So anytime you're getting low, instead of letting go, just remember that ant. Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
Welcome to another edition of Keeping It Real with Frankie D. Today, my guest is the president of the Italic Institute of America, Bill Dalcero. Bill, thank you for being here.
Thank you for asking me to show up.
Now, Bill, I understand that the Italic Institute of America is located in New York, and you are a Chicagoan.
Correct.
So how, tell us about how that came to be, and please explain the institute itself.
Yeah, a little bit about the history. They were founded in New York, Floral Park, actually, 1987. So it's going on 27 years or so.
That's good.
I found out about them, like, in the mid-90s. A local friend, Don Fiore, who writes for a lot of local publications in the area, gave me a copy of a magazine and said, you should read this because you're getting into all this Italian stuff, Italian-American history, all that kind of stuff. And it was amazing. I had never read a magazine produced by any Italian-American organization. That just kind of opened my eyes, and I thought, wow, look at this stuff. I've never learned this stuff in the mainstream media, interesting factual stuff.
So you feel that the Italic Institute is a little, comes from a different angle than maybe the other institutions.
Very much so. Very cutting edge, very intellectually curious. And me being a teacher, that's my full-time job, I was immediately attracted to their educational approach.
And who is the founder of the Italic Institute?
John Mancini in New York. He used to be a member of various organizations. Kind of got a little frustrated that they weren't really addressing educational issues in the community, so he started the organization, started this magazine, which started out as a newsletter, and over the years has become, as you can see in front of you, a 32-page full-color, I don't know how else to describe it, intellectually alive magazine.
It's a very interesting magazine. I'll be honest with you, it's about 35 pages, and I could not stop reading it.
I go back and reread it, even after I'm done reading it.
Absolutely. Lots of information, and perhaps information we really don't see anywhere.
Not at all. Not too much.
A beautiful color magazine, by the way. How, in terms of numbers with the Institute, do you have a membership?
It's pretty national, and I'll get back to how I became president, because that is an interesting question. Well, it's a New York organization, but you're from Chicago. How did that happen? Well, like I said, I got involved back in the 90s, became a writer for the magazine, editor, and then we have like a rotating board of people every couple of years who are assigned to various positions, and they asked me and said, well, you know, we're expanding. We have Chicago members, New York members, people from St. Louis now, people from California. We need to diversify our board. Would you like to be president? And I said, sure.
Because it's physically it's possible because of technology.
Correct. That's what makes it so much easier with the internet and sharing articles, and it doesn't really matter.
Because otherwise it would be very hard to have meetings if you're coming from all different parts of the country.
I don't have a private jet.
Right.
Not yet, anyway.
But. And you're able to communicate very well with all of them. And now, what is the vision? What is the focus?
The vision, it's pretty much what it states in the magazine. It's a classical approach to the Italian heritage. And they use the word italic, by the way, which throws a lot of people off.
Explain italic to us.
Well, people say, well, italic, that's a print type, you know, people who are into printing, and which is true. But if you actually look it up, in many, many dictionaries, the first definition, the first one often says, referring to the italic people. And Mancini said that was a deliberate choice because everybody always says Italian-American. He says italic has a more sweeping view.
Is that a Latin term?
It is a Latin term. It goes all the way back.
And which means literally Italy or Italian?
Italy, kind of both.
Okay.
And in fact, there is actually a city in Spain called Italica, which the Romans founded. So their focus is Italian history isn't just the immigrant experience in America. It goes back to classical Rome, and then after that through the Renaissance, then after that through Italy's reunification in the 1860s, and then, of course, the various diaspora, if I can use a fancy word. Italian peoples in Australia.
Very much appreciate if you would.
I will do that. Don't ask me to
spell
it, though.
I'll look it up when I go home. Okay.
The various people who from Italy who went to America, South America, Australia, Canada, various different peoples, the offshoots, the diaspora, so to speak. And all of that is considered Italic. It's not just, well, in America, well, the immigrants came here 100 years ago. See, most people don't realize that Italians first started coming to North America back in the 1490s with John Cabot. And people are like, John Cabot, the English explorer? No, his real name was Giovanni Caboto, who was born in Gaeta, Italy, and went to work for the English and helped them come to North America. And I've had people with PhDs say, I never learned that. I'm like, well, there you go. That's how wide the scope is of Italian-American history.
And since we're on the subject, I'm pretty sure you know the answer to this. Tell me the first or famous Italian that came to Chicago, and I believe there is a plaque of his.
The Explorer.
Yes, the Explorer.
Yep, Enrico Tonti.
And where was the plaque?
There's two, actually. There's one in downstate Illinois. I forget where Starved Rock National Park is. Forgive me. I'm a teacher. I should know this. But if you go to Starved Rock National Park in downstate Illinois, which is a very famous park people go to, nature park, there's a plaque dedicated to Enrico Tonti, who sailed with Robert LaSalle in 1681 through what is now Chicago. And he also has a plaque on the Michigan Avenue Bridge.
The Michigan Avenue Bridge, correct.
And most people say, I thought he was French because he sailed with LaSalle. He, again, another explorer from Italy.
And why do you think that there are these misconceptions of these people?
Well, it's not talked about. As you mentioned earlier, a lot of this information we literally have to dig through and publish and show to people before they'll believe it. Because the mainstream media, as you know, we don't want to sound like a broken record, they have a very, very limited negative view of what Italian means. It's either food, which is a positive, or it's criminality, which is a negative. And it's very wide, as you can see by the magazine. Look at the diversity you see here.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of the magazine, I have it in front of me, and it starts out with celebrating some amazing people. Tell me about a couple of the people that the audience would not have heard of, for most likely.
Two of them are now members, actually. They're both sculptors, right? Now, see, when you think of Italian, you should think sculptors.
Absolutely.
People who Renaissance. Artisans, Renaissance, back to classical Rome. The Romans started building before anybody else did. That's part of our heritage. It goes back 2,000 years. But one of them is Frank Porcu, who does these really amazing sculptures of presidents. He did one of President Lincoln. And our founders in New York met him at a party, and they started exchanging ideas, and now he's a member. Another one is Will Pupa, who is actually another sculptor out in L.A., who actually spent time in Italy, but whose father was a member and kind of raised him through the Institute, and now he has become a member.
I have to say that I tip my hat to you guys, because to get members throughout the country is very difficult. Because if I'm sitting in my home in San Diego, how does a group in New York affect me? And to have to grab people's interest, that's outstanding.
Well, the internet, like you mentioned earlier, helps, because now we have a website, www.italic.org, and that's been very helpful, spreading the word across the country to people who don't live on the East Coast.
And I agree with you, because without the internet, this wouldn't exist.
Correct.
However, I have to say that they must like what they see, and you're doing the right things to attract these people.
We're getting more and more, I don't want to use the word upscale, because it sounds kind of Tony or whatever. We're not looking for, quote,
snobby.
Yeah, exactly. Because most organizations, sad to say, they do have this kind of class system. We just want people who are interested, intelligent, who love to read, who love history, and who want to spread this to the younger generation so that they can carry it forward.
Well, speaking of the way you just even said that, I like John Mancini, the founder of the institution. His article says that let me get it here. It says that Americans of Italian origin have a lot going for them. For one thing, we share a self-contained universe complete with a history second to none, a work ethic based on brain as well as brawn, a creativity that covers a multitude of fields. I like that.
Correct.
Because we are brain and brawn. Not just brawn. And there's nothing wrong with brawn. We are brain as well. or else LeBron.
Correct.
Double Bs. That's excellent.
B squared.
Yes. Now tell me about his article. Why everything matters.
It's interesting. If you go a little further, though, notice the second paragraph. Mm-hmm. But like so many things in life, we have ourselves to blame because of our media image. We find ourselves divided and defensive, often disgusted by the warped versions of our culture that we see in the media.
So is he saying that we as a people could do something about this negative image
Absolutely.
That is portrayed in the media?
Absolutely.
Us, we,
plural.
And how could we do that?
Well, subscribe to our magazine. First of all, you got to educate yourself. But what we lack is what a lot of other organizations have, money. You need money to succeed. But we're doing what we think we're doing pretty good work on the limited budget that we have. It's just a matter of spreading the word, getting the magazine out there. Once people read it, they have the same reaction I did, 12, 15 years ago. Like, look at this. And it made me completely change the way I viewed, quote, what Italian was about.
Well, I agree with you totally, because once I read the magazine, it was like I was hooked. So you hook people if they know about you. If they don't know about you, though, then
it's lost. It's a marketing issue. It's
right. And when I read about this, when I read this magazine, and there was so much information, I enjoyed it thoroughly. I wanted other people. Immediately, I thought of friends, and I thought, I want them to see this.
That word of mouth is often the most powerful marketing tool we have.
It definitely is.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Now, your article, from the president's desk, equal time.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
We are allowed, when the magazine comes out, the chairman, the director, and the president, of which I am right now, to come up with our own thought topic, a little mini op-ed, if you will, for people to talk about. This particular one, I was talking about the media and how they talk about equal time, but it's kind of a warped concept when it comes to the subject of criminality. Because when you talk about organized crime or about criminals, they spend an inordinate amount of time publicizing our criminals, but when criminals of other ethnic backgrounds make it to the news, it's very hush-hush, it's quiet, there's no big media splash, Time magazine doesn't put them on the cover.
As for example, I read in the magazine, I think it was your article, if you mention a name, John Gotti,
everybody
in the country knows John Gotti.
Correct.
If you mention the name, Whitey Bulger, if I'm saying it correctly,
Correct.
I would venture to say the majority of people have no clue.
And I tried it at work with people who are not Italian.
And tell my audience, who is Whitey Bulger?
Whitey Bulger is he was just convicted, actually back in August.
He was just caught.
After 10 years on the run.
10 years on the run.
Right.
I believe they say on the lam.
On the lam.
Because Easter's coming up, so I thought I would say that.
I knew that joke was coming up too, Frank. I know you too well.
I've been waiting to use that for years.
But he's the South Boston crime boss, Irish-American.
Irish descent.
Right, doesn't make a difference, but, a thug is a thug. But my point is that because he was not Italian, he wasn't played up in the media. This guy was 10 times more vicious
than Gianni Gotti. And this guy was a very, very big, powerful
crime
huge. Boss,
correct? What he did was what John Gotti did on steroids.
Wow.
So he did more drug running, more killing, more murders. Why is he not a common
So you
here?
Find that the media has a love affair with the Italian criminal?
Actually, yes. We actually dedicated a magazine to this topic. We called it Hollywood's Love Affair, The Media and the Mafia.
It is true.
And it continues.
And it does continue. And I think, and me and you have talked about this, and I always say, as long as, say, Hollywood makes money,
it's profit,
they're going to keep making these things. Now, my opinion, it's a very difficult thing to fight, and we need to. However, I also think of the positive. I think as a group, as a community, as an ethnic group, if we could put out positive things, and we could make movies about positive stories, such as what we've discussed, Enrico Tonti, or who was the founder of the modern banking system in the United States of America?
A.P. Giannini.
Giannini.
Everybody should know his name the way they know Henry
and what
Ford
is he
or
affiliated
Carnegie.
With? Which bank?
Bank of America.
The Bank of America,
which
that
was
everywhere.
Originally called the Bank of Italy.
Correct. And then it was changed to Bank of America.
Correct.
He was the founder of this bank, correct?
Yes. He founded Hollywood. He gave Walt Disney his first money loan to start his Steamboat Willie cartoon. He subsidized the building of the Golden Gate Bridge. He subsidized all the Italian winemakers in California. And he was an honest, hand-to-hand businessman. He just basically operated on trust. When he died, he only had like $400,000 in the bank. He was trying to get rid of all his money before he passed away, which again speaks to his character. Money, it wasn't about money for him. It was about creating a business that helps people.
Wow, that's a fascinating story.
That would make a great movie.
That, to me, would make a fantastic movie.
But it's too positive. They want the negative.
Hollywood does, Hollywood, right. That's what I'm saying. We have to offset Hollywood, and we have to become our own Hollywood.
Sure.
Sometimes, you know, I'm a firm believer in taking care of business yourself. So we need to.
We advocate that.
And I know that the Institute has made a few, how would you call them, short films or...
Yep, we did one with the late Geraldine Ferraro. She was the first woman to run as a vice president back in the 1980s. She passed away a couple years ago. But I think 12 years ago, she was hired, and actually you can see it. It's on our website now. She made a 20-minute video called The Roman Legacy, and it talks about how America as a nation was influenced by Roman law, and very, very thoughtful, engaging piece. She does a great job.
And then some of the, with less well-known people, I know that you, I don't know if it was recently or it was just recently put on the website, I watched one about kind of like the immigrant story about people that came here, not 1920, people that came here in the 70s.
A little later.
Their stories, very interesting.
Yep.
There was also... did you guys do the one about the festival in New York?
That was another production from another company, I think. But Tony DiNonno had something to do with that.
Okay.
Who works with us very closely.
Okay. Well, those are great things. But I realize when you're talking about extended film, it costs a lot of money.
It's a $1 billion industry.
However, I say this to you. Do we not, as a people, have this kind of money?
It's out there.
As I recall, my friend, Mr. Dominic Candeloro, said, and I quote, I don't know any poor Italians.
That's very true.
So if we all have somewhat money, and some a lot of money, and we have organizations, and we have somewhat power, why can't we not work together and accomplish these things?
Well, it speaks to the issue that you have in front of you. We talked about cover story was intermarriage. And a lot of it is the issue of assimilation. A lot of Italians, when they started accruing money, this was a way to kind of show, look how American I am. They kind of wanted to shed their culture. And there's still some of that going around. The money that they
have... So they equate making money with becoming more American?
And successful. And being Italian is somehow something you have to shed, get rid of, hide away, not promote because it would seem like you're bragging or whatever. But if you notice, other ethnic groups are not shy about how proud they are of their culture at all. They're American first, of course, as we are, but they say, well, here's our foundation, here's why we're successful. Because of our Greek culture, our Jewish culture, our Irish culture.
The foundation.
We don't do that.
That's what you need to build a building, and that's what you need to keep and retain an ethnic identity.
We don't.
And I think our foundation's a little weak. And it saddens me to say it.
And the wealthy people you speak about, a lot of them spend their monies on non-ethnic charities. Hospitals, orphanages. These are good. These are fine. But they don't put it toward their own
wonderful
culture.
Charities, but like me and you always say, charity begins at home.
Absolutely.
So
that's
if
a great
we
phrase.
Do not educate ourselves and educate our future, our youth, then we will not be educated. And when I talk about education, I don't mean math, English, and reading. I mean educated
knowing
in
history.
Our history.
You might want to share your story about the Polish kids you know in your area, because they go to Polish school, correct?
Absolutely. There's. I didn't even realize they had this for... They have a Polish school on Saturdays, and it's for these children that some of these children actually came from Poland, and some of them are the children of Polish people, and they learn the language, and they learn the history, and they do religion things, and it's fantastic because I'm sure all these Polish kids, when they're adults, will all speak Polish, will all know about Poland. I'm sorry to say, I don't think a lot of Italian kids, when they're adults, speak Italian or know about Italy.
Correct.
Now, why? I don't know. Because personally, I think we have a beautiful language, a fantastic history, a fantastic country, and a fantastic history to be proud of.
Even in this country.
Even in this country. Therefore, which leads me to my beautiful idea, which I would hope that someday would become a reality, to have a one-day Italian-American cultural awareness seminar. What do I mean by that? I thought for children, and I definitely think for children, but I even think for adults, because
oh, sure.
I think most
yeah.
adults wouldn't know.
Oh yeah.
And what I mean by that is the Institute has put together a lot of history of Italian-Americans and biographies and whatnot, things of this nature about so many people we didn't even know were Italian, or so many things, items of every day that we didn't know an Italian-American invented.
Correct.
This is what I would like to teach our children. It's not... propaganda, because it sounds like an ugly word, but it's just
pride.
It's pride. Exactly. It's pride. showing them short videos, but teaching them about this. One day in different sections, we'll have different, you know, about technology, sports, banking, history, this, that, and the other. I think it would be fantastic.
Science. Don't forget science.
Science. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And I think the Italian language is gigantic for them to know. But also, the history in English is equally gigantic to know. These are very important things. And since we talk about intermarriage in the magazine, if we have someone that grows up and, you know, mom's Italian and dad's something else, well, when that child grows up and marries, and apparently the likelihood in this day and age is not very well.
70% they're talking, yeah.
Intermarriage.
Yeah.
Right. So now he marries a non-Italian. Now his kids are 25%. And you see where I'm going with this with the generations. So if we don't do something about it, it really is going to be lost. It really is going to be lost. And this, which leads me to, at the end of the show, my quote of the show, which will play into this completely. And it's a very sad thing. And we, as a people, need to do something about it. Not tomorrow, but yesterday.
Yeah, the day before yesterday. I would correct you on that.
Yes. I hope the powers that be, and, you know, maybe this can offspring to people and inspire people, and we could get together, because there's power in numbers.
Oh, yeah.
To do something. Now, another article I'd like to touch on.
Sure.
Very interesting. Helen Cherese in the Roaring Twenties. Tell me about Helen Cherese.
Very interesting lady. Again, another great example of someone you wouldn't think of as, quote, Italian-American, but she was very Italian. She was a daughter of Sicilian immigrants, came to Chicago in 1899 with her parents, grew up in Oak Park, went to Oak Park River Forest High School.
And if I may, it says here, she was the editor of her high school newspaper.
And
her co-editor was future author Ernest Hemingway.
Right. Heard about him? Anybody?
Yeah.
Okay. That's how smart she was.
She's the youngest woman in Illinois to receive a law license.
Correct.
She was a few months shy of her 21st birthday and the first female lawyer to start her own firm on Chicago's famous LaSalle Street, because male-run firms wouldn't hire her.
How about that? Talk about a trendsetter, a groundbreaker.
That's fascinating. Never heard her name. I would venture to say most of us have never heard her name.
No. And this would be a perfect subject for a film biography, considering the court case she had, very famous court case, which is why we talk about this in the article. An Italian immigrant woman who is the complete opposite of Helen, not very well educated, just come off the boat, so to speak, to use the old language.
Right.
Who was accused of murdering her husband. Helen felt that she got a bum trial because she was Italian, very prejudiced. She convinced the Illinois State Supreme Court to retry her and to get rid of her death sentence. So here you had an Italian-American woman, very sharp, educated, helping out a country woman, and getting her off, basically, and helping her.
And beyond that, too, it says in the article, when they went to fight it again, it says a group of Italian-American lawyers helped with this case.
Yep,
there was about four Italian-American lawyers with Helen Cherese.
Male. She was the lead, though.
All male, and she was the lead. And what happened eventually with this case?
The woman was set free.
And didn't Helen kind of rechange her the
strategy?
Yes.
The strategy.
And she kind of did a makeover?
Correct.
And made her appear more well-groomed.
She used the sexism of the day to help, because she noticed a lot of these, quote, white women, you know, the flappers, the women who came from really well-schooled, like Anglo families who had a lot of money and partied and were also convicted of crimes, often kept getting off because of their social status. And Helen Cherese saw this and said, well, it's obvious they're going after this Isabella Nitti Crudele, right?
Right.
Because she's, you know, lower class, not well-educated. The Chicago Tribune even describes her as a leather-faced monkey in their print. Can you imagine a newspaper today describing someone's ethnicity?
Not in
like
a million
that?
Years.
And so Helen said this is obviously because of the sexism and the anti-Italian ism of it, if that's a word. So she made it work for her. She gave her a makeover, as you say, toned her up, taught her some English, made her, you know, conduct herself more appropriately to the jury, so to speak.
That's great.
And the jury's bought into it, let her go.
And what the modern Broadway musical, which Chicago was inspired
indirectly
from this trial.
Correct.
That's fantastic. One other article I'd like to touch on was, which people would be familiar with, Under the Tuscan Sun became a very well-known movie. It was a book. Tell me about what we don't know about Under the Tuscan Sun.
Well, it was talking about marketing earlier. What a marketing triumph this was. Frances Mays, who we later found out years later, was actually from a very wealthy southern family in the South, I believe Georgia. But she was living in San Francisco. Actually, kind of a clever idea. She went over to Italy.
To Tuscany.
Tuscany specifically, which people hadn't really heard of.
At that time.
At the time. Bought an abandoned farmhouse, kind of spruced it up, went to a publisher, said, what do you think of this as an idea? The publisher said, has potential. They really, really put a lot of money into marketing it, and the whole Tuscan thing was born. All of a sudden, it became very cool to go to Tuscany to eat nice Italian foods and the pastas and the wine and all that kind of thing. And it turns out this woman herself really doesn't know much about Italian culture, doesn't speak it very well, treats the local Italians there, we've found out, very condescendingly, like a rich person would, bossing around servants or whatever. And her insight into Italian culture is not really that clever, funny, or true. But yet she's a millionaire now because of these books.
And on the other hand, there is another book or books by...
British authors, a couple of sisters basically, called Extra Virgin. They bought a house up in Liguria, which is near Genova, which is where Columbus came from. They did kind of the same thing, but it's a totally different take. They try to get into the culture. They meet the people. One of the women, I think, even intermarries a local Italian. So their take on it is completely different than Frances Mays.
So the book is called Extra Virgin by... Yeah.
Annie Hawks, I believe. Hawes?
Yes, Hawes.
Hawes. H-A-W-E-S.
Annie Hawes, Extra Virgin. I look forward to reading it. I have one quick story that a friend of mine told, and it was just it's a true story, and he was just telling me matter-of-factly, and I don't want to use his name, but I do want to use his name. Where he works, he received a call over the winter, and it was after a bad snow, and it was an elderly Italian woman. She had a heavy accent, and she got confused. I think she thought she was calling, like, the village hall, and she wanted them to
plow the snow
in her driveway, the sidewalk. So he was trying to tell her, no, you actually have the wrong number. I'm sorry. And she said what her address was. Well, when he hung up the phone, this gentleman immediately called someone he knew, sent him over there, plowed all their snow, the driveway, the sidewalk, the front steps. Hmm. And the lady called him the next day to pay him, naturally, for this service. And he said, no, I don't want no money. Thank you. That's quite all right. And he did it. She was an older Italian lady. I think that's a great story.
That is a great story.
I wish and I hope that we do things like that, because that's called taking care of our own. That's like if you are able to speak Italian and you're in some the DMV or a situation like that, and you have some Italian that you could see is Italian, they don't know what they don't understand.
Help them out.
We need to be more like that. We need to help our own people. It's very important. On the other hand, too, on another note, I should say, I recently went to the Chicago Symphony for the very first time in my life. It was a rehearsal that they opened up to the public. It was free. And I got to see Mr. Riccardo Muti, the conductor of the Chicago Symphony.
The maestro.
The maestro, who is from Naples,
yep,
Italy, who apparently is a world-known conductor. He is tremendous in his field, and I have to say that he was very impressive. He talked to the audience. He told stories. It made you proud. It gave you a great feeling. I wish we would, I find it funny that we're here in Chicago. We have this man come from Italy. He's the conductor of the Chicago Symphony.
Yep.
Yet we have not reached out to him and brought him into the community and to meet kids and to try to inspire a little bit, because he's inspiring. Yep. I'll tell you that. From the balcony right before the ceiling, which was very high up, I was inspired. I felt pride. It was tremendous. So I advise everyone to try to see his symphony, and also if we as a people, as a community, could reach out to this man,
yeah,
I think it would be wonderful.
Because that's a great idea.
He's an exceptional man. And I believe we're running out of time. Anything else you would like to say? Please give us the website and information about again.
Sure. www.italic.org.
And on this, you can see all the information about the Institute, correct?
Yeah, the magazine, some of the clips you were speaking about earlier that we posted online now of things that we've produced.
And a membership, if I'm not mistaken, just a simple membership, $50 for a year. Yeah. That $50 gets you newsletters, colored magazines. It's nothing.
It's worth it.
It's nothing. It's worth it. It's $50. That's a couple of pizzas. And beyond that, it would really help a great cause.
Thank you. We think so. We appreciate that.
Bill, thank you for coming. The quote of the show, which comes out of the Italic Way magazine by Gabriele D'Annunzio, who is a famous
poet, patriot,
poet, writer, soldier. Yes. He lived from 1863 to 1938, so not that long ago.
Correct.
He says, learning about our origins is an important legacy to our children, since memories are not used to remember lost time, but to start again. Knowing that losing our roots inevitably leads to a loss in our identity as a people who live, think, and love.
Well stated.
Excellent.
Bravo.
Bill, thank you. I want to thank Ridgewood High School, Kevin. I want to thank John DeVita. It's been a great show, and we look forward to the next one.
Thank you.
Just what makes that little old ant think he'll move that rubber tree plant? Anyone knows an ant can't move a rubber tree plant.
But he's got high hopes. He's got high hopes. He's got high apple pie in the sky.
So anytime you're getting low, instead of letting go, just remember that ant. Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
Oops, there goes another rubber tree plant.
You have been listening to Keeping It Real with Frankie D from the John DeVita Broadcast Center on the Windy City Hometown Entertainment Network. This broadcast was directed by John DeVita. Our audio engineer is James Rohde, and the executive producer of Windy City Hometown Entertainment Network is John Shikanda. This broadcast was pre-recorded on Thursday, March the 27th, the year 2014. Be safe, and thanks for listening.